welcome to another edition of Top Turnbuckle here on Sportsnet590.ca. Very tense, everybody is. Everybody,
you're damn right, it's tense.
Why?
Why
is it so tired?
I'm tired. I've been here all freaking day waiting for you guys, and then you're off doing your sports thing or whatever, and taking your time, and you trying to
figure out...
You want
to explain what that is? I have no idea.
By the way,
I'm going to rent. You're going around trying to figure out your scheduling, whatever. Am I starring on The Fan or not? I'm tired.
Rudy needs a hug. Alter hug Rudy.
Don't hug me.
You want me to go hug you? I'll post a video on YouTube.
Turnbuckle
YouTube.
Before we get started, we should say that everybody's in studio. I'm Rob Wong. That's Rowdy Rudy Blair, David Alter.
That's a great nickname
for him. And Jeff Roman. So hopefully that adds a little bit of levity. But we got a lot to talk about on this edition, first of all, guys. And, of course, we'll hear Rudy's interview. Got a chance to speak with Dolph Ziggler earlier today. We're also giving away a Dolph Ziggler autograph photo. Looks fantastic. A nice 8x12. If you want to enter to win, you have to follow the Top Turnbuckle Twitter account and retweet our tweet regarding the autograph photo. So a great chance to win. Pretty awesome prize. We'll also hear from Mark Hominick, one of the UFC's best, and get his WrestleMania moments. What we decided to do heading into WrestleMania, we'll hear some pretty famous people and their favorite WrestleMania moments. We've got Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski of the American versus Wyshynski podcast coming up later in a couple of weeks' time. So you'll hear from a lot of people here at Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and hopefully some other great guests, and hear their favorite WrestleMania moments. We'll also do our own, of course, as we get closer to WrestleMania, big WrestleMania 28 preview show. But let's talk about the week that was in the WWE, and we'll start with Monday Night Raw. And I want to start with Eve and Zack Ryder. And where I want to go with this is Mick Foley tweeted out that he thinks the WWE is sending mixed messages because, as we know, John Cena got hosky trending worldwide on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. And what Mick was saying, you know, that the WWE has their Be a Star program. It's the anti-bullying program. But, you know, they're sending mixed messages because they're doing all this name-calling stuff. And whether it's, you know, The Rock doing promos or this hosky thing, I mean, the WWE is just sending mixed messages. Your guys' thoughts. We'll start with you, Rudy.
You know, I never really thought about it that way, and I have to agree with him that, you know, it's a half and half thing. Part of me, yeah, I do agree with him that, you know, you're basically saying, hey, everybody can make fun of somebody. You know, when you've got a group of people like that, you can treat somebody bad. But at the same time, this is wrestling. This is a place where people go to let off steam, and you are expected to do those things. Those guys in the ring, it's part of their image. It's a storyline that's being followed. So, and it's a soap opera, and the fans are all part of the soap opera. So in one way, yeah, they are a little bit right. And then, you know, if somebody's going to believe that, you know, if you're going to pick on somebody, you know, you shouldn't bully them the way it's being shown. But at the same time, though, it's a wrestling event. That's what wrestlers do. That's why you've got guys out there, you know, you boo them, you know, you call them names, and the guys actually encourage you doing that. So, you know what? It's just part of the fun, believe it or not.
And Dave, this is the PG era, but I mean, yeah, you know, hosky's not the worst word in the world. The kids watch other stuff, and whether it's movies or, you know, music, so other forms of entertainment where there's a lot of worse things.
Not only is hosky not that bad, it's misspelt. Because the ho with an E is like a rake ho. It's
right.
Like hose. Actual hose is H-O.
Yes, if we're going to call somebody a hoe, let's get it right.
But I understand that it looks like house-ski, and then people don't know. I get it. But if you have a problem with this, I respect Mick Foley a ton. But if you have a problem with this, then you have a problem with all kinds of drama, no matter what. Because exactly what Rudy said, it's a show. People realize it's a show. There has to be a villain. There has to be a good guy. And at that point, it is a show. And I know you're going to bring this up. I might steal your thunder a little bit, Jeff, but the Bella Twins, okay? Everyone knows they're bullies, and they still do the Be a Star program. So I mean, if you can't see one, the difference between the other, it's not even worth explaining.
Can I just jump in really quickly, too? And it's kind of surprising also that, you know, this is coming from Mick Foley. Here's a guy who I have said 1,000 times, if anything, I love the guy to death, but he's actually in his own way ruined wrestling because, let's face it, what he did in the ring... Yeah. I mean, he's causing other people to injure themselves. So the fact that he's worried about some name-calling is one thing, but what he has done to represent wrestling, to me, I think is a whole lot worse.
Yeah, I think the thing you got to remember about wrestling is everything in wrestling, every angle, somebody's being bullied. So if we're taking that literal stance on it, then the WWE is the biggest contradiction ever. But you can't, because like David said, the Bella Twins are involved in this. They're breaking away between what's on the screen and what is reality. And I think that's where, you know, where you draw the line in the sand. And I mean, you brought up the Hoski thing. How many people of the WWE's target audience really understand what a hoe is? You know, like, they're geared towards kids.
Would you like to explain it, please?
Well, I'm not going there because we have a PG audience, but, you know, the kids that watch, you know, they don't know what that is. They're not, they're saying Hoski. They don't realize the derivative of it. And people that do understand it are of age too, you know, so it's not that big of a deal. So I think Mick Foley's just thinking way too much into this, because when you look at it, the meat and potatoes of wrestling is you have a bully and you have a babyface, and they're going to clash. Everybody gets bullied in wrestling on the screen, and the fact that they're having these people sort of break character and say, hey, you know what we do on TV isn't, you know, how you should treat people. I think that's the main message that the WWE is sending, and I think Mick Foley's thinking too much into it.
No, I agree with you, because, I mean, how many times have you seen one guy get jumped by three or four different guys?
Yeah.
It's a constant thing. Nobody has ever complained about that. Now suddenly this, it's just like, Mick, you're one of the guys who used to jump guys too. So what's the problem?
He was a member of Union.
I think the most morally wrong thing about that whole segment was the fact that Zack Ryder contradicted himself within the span of 2 minutes.
Oh God, Larry, let's get into
bless
that.
Zack Ryder is the
let's
the,
get into that.
Zack Ryder is the world's fastest healer as well. I mean, he went from being in a full body cast essentially to coming out with just a cane, and he still had a bit of a swagger walk with the cane. He still got the Long Island Iced Tea flowing through his body. I don't really want to talk about the angle. I mean, it's so awful.
No, I want to go into
you want to talk
angle.
About
yeah,
it? Fine, Rudy.
Let's
okay.
talk about it, because he's just ruined it for all the guys. Because you wuss. You big wuss. Yeah. All the girls got to do is kiss you on the mouth, and now you're going to what? Give her all your money. Give her... Babe, you want a car? Here you go. I mean, now, if anything, that's wrong.
Yeah.
To be showing guys that, you know, all you got to do is have a pretty face, and, you know, she can make any guy do whatever they want. And, man, this is just bad for guys, man. This is not good.
It's like a reverse sexism kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I don't want this, man. I don't want this happening.
Yeah, it's a pretty brutal angle. Let's move on to something a little bit more positive, I guess you could say. And we were kind of talking about this off-air, Jeff, and you mentioned how Santino Marella is just... over. Like, absolutely
it's
over.
It's almost ridiculous.
And, of course, he won the United States Championship defeating, almost said Zack Ryder, but Jack Swagger on Monday Night Raw. And, I mean, the crowd is just so over for this guy. It's unbelievable. And I guess it really hasn't been since Royal Rumble, because before that, we've seen him in spurts and, you know, people go crazy every time he comes out, breaks out the Cobra. I mean, it's nice to see him win the title. I mean, does anybody here really think he's going to be, you know, elevated to main event status at any time? I mean, the gimmick is great, but it seems like it's one of those things where it's only good in spurts, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, he's a comedy character at best right now. I mean, like, the way his Cobra thing has gotten over, it rivals, you know, whatever the worm that Scotty Too Hotty did, and even the people's elbow to a certain extent. It's the most ridiculous move, but fans love it for whatever reason. I think it's the actions that he does. Yeah. And,
well, it's the
and,
new Socko, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly, right? So, I mean, good on him for getting over, because they've given him nothing to get over with. He's done it all himself, and his power walk to the ring, I think, is really funny. So, I mean, he's a comedy character. He's not going to be a main event guy because he's a comedy character until he breaks out of that and turns into, like, the heel that, you know, it doesn't care anymore. But I like them putting the title on him because it rewards him for, you know, essentially getting himself over. But it's not going to be a long title run. We know that. And what happened to his unibrow? He doesn't have that anymore? Like, did he shaved it off? He got self-conscious? Like, what happened?
Rudy, you're shaking head.
No, you see, here's where my problem comes in, because what they've just done is... the U.S. title has just gotten lower than it's ever been. Don't get me wrong. I love him to death. But it just shows how unimportant the U.S. title is that they're going to have it on a character like this. And it just seemed from Zack Ryder, it just started getting lower and lower. I actually thought when Zack had it that somehow, some way, it was going to be elevated a little bit more like this hero. You know, the way this title should be represented from guys who had it, like the Ric Flairs, the Harley Races, the Greg Valentines, you know, the Ricky Steamboats, Sergeant Slaughter. But now, you know, you've got a guy who is considered a comic character. And because having that title around his waist just sort of represents that same comic. And let's face it, as we said in a million times, that as long as it's not a title that was originally with the WWE, it's always going to be considered lower.
Right, and we always talk. I mean, it's supposed to be Monday Night Raw's version of the Intercontinental Championship, right, which is on SmackDown, Dave.
You know what? I'm going to take a different approach, and I think this actually helps the U.S. title, and I'll explain why. It wasn't doing anything for Jack Swagger. I think we can all agree.
Oh, absolutely.
We can all agree on that.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether he's a comic character, the reaction that he gets, whether you agree with it or not, kind of elevates exactly where he is in the depth of the entire roster pool, that he's kind of an up-and-comer in a lot of ways because his character is getting featured in a different kind of way and getting it's building momentum. And you want to give that mid-card title to someone who's building momentum. Giving him the main title would have been ridiculous when they flirted with that idea a couple times and like being a finalist for Royal Rumble and some other situations. But I actually think this will help the U.S. title because he's getting over and people are actually going to care about it for the first time in a while. They cared with Zack Ryder, but it was a short-lived run. And I agree that they should have done something more with it there. But everything about it, even I was crying in laughter when he was crying when he won it. It just cemented it perfectly. It was fantastic.
But here's where I have the problem with that, because I grew up watching the U.S. title as the stepping stone to the world title.
Yeah.
This U.S. title version is not even close to being considered a stepping stone for anything. I mean, it's to me, it's a filler title for filler matches. And to have somebody, you know, like him holding the title, let's face it, the guy, if anybody knows him, knows that he actually has really great skills. He actually has great MMA skills. You right. never get to see that. All you see is that comedy. You don't see the skills that past great champions have had, and that's what bothers me.
I'll take it one step further. If you don't like where the mid-card titles are because they're not really being cast in that way, then I feel like the new top titles are now the mid-card matches. Look at WrestleMania. There's three main events that don't feature a title anymore, and it almost seems like the WWE and the World Heavyweight title are secondary.
Oh, absolutely. So, and let's talk about the tag team. It ain't even in existence in my book.
But I think that's just a way of you have to, whether you want to embrace it or not, or what you grew up with, is just not the norm anymore. And they're kind of changing the definition of what titles mean.
And Jeff, you'll get the last point on this, but how much of this as well, the fact that, you know, there aren't enough mid-card guys that they feel can be elevated to that main event status? I mean, Cody Rhodes is the Intercontinental Champion, and he's holding it now. Well, I think people within WWE feel that he's a guy that eventually they could run with.
Helps that daddy's on the booking committee, though.
Helps that daddy's on the booking committee as well. But you know what? I think Cody Rhodes, I mean, for me personally, I think he's a rising star.
Yeah,
same with Dolph Ziggler. But, I mean, how much of that do you think has to do with it, that there's not enough guys that they feel could be pushed to main event?
I think the problem is that the roster's just too big, and they try to give everybody some TV time, so they just sort of all blend together, and nobody's really getting any momentum. I mean, it's nice that Santino has gotten over, but like it's almost like a glass ceiling. He's not going to get elevated to a main event status with this comedy character. I don't think he will.
You never know.
Well, you never know, but I mean, how many, you know, you can count on one hand how many comedy characters actually got world title runs, right?
A lot of people never thought Steve Austin would get over by being the bad good guy.
Yeah.
See, trends can change. That's my point.
I think that's a completely different comparison, though, because Austin was a badass. Santino's just a guy that makes people laugh.
Santino was a guy who made people laugh almost his entire time in the WWE, with the exception of the one time they made him heel. And he has never been as over as he is now.
But that's also telling, though, because he's been there for like 6 years, right? If he hasn't been over this much, right?
Mark Henry was there for God knows how long.
You can't compare the two. He was never that over. You can't compare those two either.
Same goes with Christian. Well, a lot of people, we like him, but he was never really over, and he was there for a very long time.
Well, I think the issue, I mean, with Santino is, as great as the comedic stuff is, there's a point where he's got to get serious at some point.
That's where I'm at.
The Rock is, you know, when we think of The Rock, we think of all his funny promos. We think of, you know, Edge and Christian, all their funny promos, but they knew when to be serious.
Absolutely.
And when they were serious, people actually took them seriously. I don't know if anybody will actually take Santino seriously.
That's where I have a problem with that. Nobody takes him seriously. So if they don't take him seriously, why take the title seriously?
Yeah, the thing with Santino is I don't know anything about him aside from the fact that he uses that sock and that he walks funny. Like, he doesn't have any other gimmick. And what's incredible crying for? Wasn't he the Intercontinental Champion like 5 years ago? What's he crying for?
All right, let's move on to another feud, I guess, that's just started. And it began on SmackDown a week ago. Kane is back now. He drove the ambulance back to the arena, and he is back on the WWE roster. But he attacked Randy Orton, and Randy Orton got his revenge on Monday Night Raw. So it looks like, you know, this is like old school wrestling where somebody just comes down in the ring, beats up a guy for no reason, and they start a feud. And this looks like one of the filler matches at WrestleMania. It's going to be Randy Orton taking on Kane. I mean, I almost feel bad for Randy Orton because,
yeah.
I mean, he's been injured, of course, but it's like, Randy, we got nothing else for you. You want to just fight Kane at WrestleMania?
Well, a guy who's just been buried massively in a main event match that on a pay-per-view that really meant nothing. That's exactly what's left for Randy Orton. How are we supposed to buy Kane as a formidable opponent after that kind of burial?
What was Kane on a road trip? What is he just driving the thing back now?
Yeah.
Go cruise around the desert or something like that? Like, what happened?
Yeah, no, you know what? It's kind of embarrassing. I think it's what the WWE has done. If you watch a lot of the WrestleManias, there's a lot of them. I mean, I still think about Coco Beware and Butch Reed. When they wrestled, what was it, WrestleMania 3? And I remember sitting there going, well, why are these guys wrestling?
Yeah.
I could care less.
Yeah.
And it was an I don't care less kind of match. With this one, you do have two superstars, and I will use the term superstars on them, but to put those two together for no reason is ridiculous. They should have had Kane going up against Zack Ryder, and of course, you know, anything but this.
Well, the WWE screwed themselves with that storyline because they basically broke Zack Ryder into a million pieces, and there's no way he could have recovered in time to wrestle at WrestleMania.
The thing, too, with Kane and Randy Orton is, like, WWE always does those sort of, like, battle royal matches or, like, eight-man tag matches to get everybody on the roster onto the WrestleMania show so they can get that exposure, they get a bit more of a payout. But the problem is with Kane and Randy Orton is that they're not low-level like that where they can be involved in, like, an eight-man tag.
Mm-hmm.
They're too good for that, and they're not quite at the main event level because everyone else is booked up. So it's like, well, we got to have these two guys on the show because they're two of our biggest stars. Okay, ipso facto, we got to put them together because we have nothing else.
What do you do with Zack Ryder now for WrestleMania? I agree with Rob.
There's referee, maybe?
Well, maybe you put him as Money in the Bank because it seems like they're going to bring that back because as far as we know, that's not a pay-per-view anymore. So
yeah, they decided to scrap that. This kind of reminds me, and I mean, I just think of two stars, and I mean, at the time they may have hyped it pretty well. I don't really remember, but if you go back to WrestleMania 18 when I was here in Toronto, when the Undertaker wrestled Ric Flair, and I mean, obviously Undertaker wrestles every WrestleMania, but it just felt like one of those matches, like, sorry, Taker, we don't have anybody for you.
Yeah.
And here's Ric Flair. He's here as well. You guys
he's
fight
a legend,
it out.
Why not?
Exactly. And that's what this kind of feels like.
Maybe they had him at WWE New York.
Yeah, exactly. So they had that as well. Should also mention that Big Show will be taking on Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania for the Intercontinental title as well.
By the way,
I just
want to say that I'm so happy. I just saw this for the first time because, you know, I watch, but I'm not as hardcore into it anymore as you guys. The belt, the Intercontinental belt, is the old school belt again. That is awesome. That is so wicked. I'm
you're about
so excited.
You're about
8 months
too late.
The main title.
Yeah.
It should be like the Eagle or the Globe for the main title.
The Eagle should be brought back. I think it's fantastic that they brought back that title.
No, I agree with you, but, you know, Randy Orton should have been wrestling Cody Rhodes in my book. You know, I think that would have been a great match. And even though he is considered world status, I mean, I would have liked to have seen him win the Intercontinental title. I think we need those kind of changes up where you just don't keep the guy on a certain level because at least then, again, that helps elevate those titles again.
Or even Dolph Ziggler. I mean, you talk to him, right? He doesn't really have an opponent yet? No.
No, but you know what? I'd love to see Dolph win Money in the Bank, honestly. I think he's geared for that right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like they just have a lot of guys and really nothing for them to do at the moment, and that's what
I think with Randy Orton, when they brought him back, I think the plan probably was for him to win Royal Rumble, and everyone figured it out, so he almost got, you know, screwed over by the smart marks out there who figured out that he was going to win.
Well, my guess, I mean, I really hope they don't do Randy Orton, Kane, you know, continue the feud after WrestleMania, but my guess is Randy Orton will be thrown somewhere in the mix with Daniel Bryan, Sheamus for the World Heavyweight Championship.
One can hope.
Yes, one can hope. Let's move on now to CM Punk, Chris Jericho, and we talked in last week's episode, Jeff and myself, how this one's really starting to pick up some steam right now.
Really? I think so.
I mean, finally, Chris Jericho actually attacked CM Punk outside of a wrestling ring, and I thought that really, you know, took it to a new level. They broke out the old school walls of Jericho.
The old
school
walls
really
of Jericho.
Awesome.
Okay, but here's what my problem comes with this. What I was hoping for, I'm not even worried about the wrestling. What I was hoping for, of course, was the jibber-jabbing back and forth with each other. Honestly, I think it's a little stale. I mean, I think I think CM Punk is doing well. I just don't think our Canadian boy is doing all that well. He's just sitting there so angry or whatever. And then, of course, when you got CNN and Rock going back and forth, it's like, I think those guys are just way above what they're doing.
Well,
right
I think what has happened, I mean, it's kind of been unexpected, but like Jeff and I talked about this last week, the promos that have been getting cut whether it's, you know, Undertaker, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, or Rock and Cena has actually been better than than Jericho and CM Punk and has really pushed that back out of the limelight a little bit. I don't think anybody really expected that to happen, but as far as CM Punk, Jericho goes, I mean, it kind of surprisingly has been pushed back a little
bit. You know what? I do like the fact going back to just those two guys with Jericho and CM Punk, that Jericho got the upper hand on him in a match. He actually got a pinfall on CM Punk. I think that was really important to actually push Jericho. Otherwise, I would completely agree with Rudy in this case, because in all the exchanges and promos, it always did look like Jericho was the inferior guy. And it's almost like they cast him that because he was always the lovable loser, for lack of a better way of putting it. Even when he won titles, he was still clamoring for respect. And to actually give him a legitimate pinfall, even if it's in a tag match, it's a great way to at least build some momentum in his favor.
I have to say one thing with Jericho, because I think he's a great wrestler, but I honestly have to say this angry Jericho, I'm not really hip at. I kind of miss that whiny, fun-loving kind of Jericho who... Who was his bodyguard?
Ralphus. You know, no teeth in the belly shirt.
That's the Jericho that I miss. And I think if that Jericho went up against CM Punk, oh my goodness, that would be classic.
Yeah, but which Jericho, instead of Ralphus, remember when they had
Lionheart?
No, for two episodes on SmackDown, when SmackDown just debuted in 99.
I forget.
They had Howard Fink.
Oh, yeah.
They had the Fink, Howard Finkelstein, the Fink, play the Ralphus spot for two episodes.
That's
and it was
right.
great, but they cut it away because it was too eerily like the Ralphus angle that they felt. If they would do that, it would take away from Jericho's
I just want to piggyback on Rudy's point, but I mean, if they were baby faces, if Chris Jericho was, you know, the cool Chris Jericho against the cool CM Punk, I mean, would that really entertain you though, Jeff?
I think it just goes back to what we were talking about Santino, where Jericho was, you know, sort of the comedy character, and now they've made him go serious to try and, you know, elevate his character even more and get him back to that main event. I like the angry Chris Jericho, you know. I don't really know what he's angry about yet, but
exactly.
Well, he's angry because he thinks CM Punk has stolen his stuff, which is not true, because CM Punk came back and said, well, you say you're the best, but other people like Bret Hart have been saying they're the best forever.
I think it works, though, because he's angry because he's the self-indulged rock star that they're trying to put out there, and he's angry that someone's trying to copy him. I get it. I get what they're doing. I just think instead of being that angry, he should be more obnoxious like he was in his first few episodes, where he's just the coat. Because now the coat's become secondary. I think the coat should be back in the limelight of how ridiculous he was, and just make him do ridiculous things as a way of just being, I'm the rock star, it's all about me.
And I gotta agree with that. I mean, honestly, he should ditch the coat, man. I mean, I'm already done with it as it is. I mean, he should just rip it apart.
I love the coat, but I think they should take it one step further. Give him another over-the-top entrance or something that's even more ridiculous, something that makes him the self-indulged rock star that he should be.
And I agree with that, but I'm just still going back to that, still that, I'm angry about this. It's like, man, enough already. Damn, I could hear that at work from people all day long.
I think they need to freshen up his theme song, too. It's been going on for way too long. He needs like a rock, hard rock type theme song to get it into
like
the
a
mood.
Fozzy song?
Yeah, maybe, why not? Maybe.
At the very least, bring back the countdown, because when he just shows up and says, break the walls down, it's like, oh, okay, it's anticlimactic.
But the countdown
like,
was holding the whole like,
the
Y2K
countdown.
Thing,
no, the
right?
The
it's so old.
He'll always be Y2J.
That's like 10 years old.
Doesn't matter.
Years old
I agree with Rob that they have to bring the countdown back, even if it's just a 5 count, something small, something that builds that he's coming.
You know, wasn't 5 count a group?
3 count.
Three count.
There
and,
you go.
The only real 5 count in wrestling is the 5 count King Kong Bundy would ask for.
All right, let's move on to the co-main events at WrestleMania 28. Undertaker versus Triple H, Hell in a Cell. We now know, I mean, we've known for quite a while, that Shawn Michaels is going to be the special referee, as he put it, special guest referee in the
Ruins
match.
Ruins it.
It's not needed.
I think we've talked about this before. It's not really needed. But let's talk from the standpoint about the promos that have been being cut by all three of these guys. It really has elevated this match, I think. I mean, you throw in the Hell in a Cell wrinkle. I mean, I'm really excited for this bout now. We'll start with you, Rudy.
No, I agree with you. Okay, you see how we talked about that Jericho anger? I wasn't really hip to that. the anger that seems to be in this, I think, is very, very real, because you've got three guys who have gone through some hellish but so great matches. So they know what it's like. They know what it's like to feel like what you see as if, you know, their last breath is going to be, you know, you're going to breathe it and, you know, you're going to be over with. I mean, these guys really knocked themselves out to put out great matches. Now, to have all three of them together like this, when they call this the end of an era, I absolutely agree with what they're doing here. So, personally, I think this might really be the show stealer. I mean, you've got guys who know how to wrestle. You've got guys who have been through the wars. You know, the guys who know how to bring a crowd to their feet. And you know, because they've got all these young guys there, no matter what, they want to make sure, whether it could be any one of them's last matches, they want to make sure they go out on top.
Are we expecting any dangerous spots in this one? I mean, these guys are up there in age, but are we expecting, like, actual Hell in a Cell stuff, Jeff?
I don't. I don't expect them to do a lot. I imagine The Undertaker does his tope over the top rope and whatnot, but I envision this as being more of a, like, a bloody, like, chairs and sledgehammer type match, not, like, the big high spot type things. As Rudy said, you know, I think it's great that, you know, these two guys are the two that are doing Hell in a Cell, because we know that they come to work at WrestleMania. And the thing that I love the most about this program is the vignettes that they've been doing. Just totally hyping up and reminding people the fact that The Undertaker barely won last year. He pulled off that miracle submission. And to me, for the first time in my head, I'm wondering, does The Undertaker actually lose because of the buildup that they've done? This is the first time, I think, that I can remember during The Undertaker streak, when they started, you know, making reference to the streak, that I've actually legitimately thought that, you know, he might lose. So I think that the vignettes have been great, and I thought that the finish from last year was even better, and I like the fact that they added the Hell in a Cell wrinkle to it. Adding Shawn Michaels in as a referee, I don't know if it's really needed. I mean, I think these two guys would have gone out and done their thing by itself. But as Rudy sort of alluded to, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe this was, you know, both Triple H and The Undertaker's last match.
Well, I think the interesting part, you throw Shawn Michaels into it, now it sort of makes you question whether or not, I mean, is he going to count Triple H, you know, is he going to count the three
like
when his
it.
Shoulders
it's
are
not
pinned?
Needed.
I mean, I think it just throws in another question. I understand it's not needed, but
no,
I mean, if you...
It's a gimmicky thing for a match that already has enough credibility on its own.
But okay, now think about this, because if you got Shawn Michaels in there, okay, why don't we just throw a scenario? You've got Triple H winning the match. You got Shawn Michaels there, and he's going, oh my God, my partner and best friend is actually going to beat him. Don't you think that maybe Shawn Michaels might pull something? Maybe the super kick, knock him out?
That's what I mean. It throws in that extra question. In the back of your mind, you're like, okay, well, Shawn's...
But he's the referee
right,
there.
But he has an impact in the match
now. And as
the
referee, you know, they're not going to change anything. He can count 1, 2, 3. Anything can happen. So I love the fact that there is a chance that any twist can happen.
How many matches can you go back to and recall the special guest referee making that match great?
It's hard.
There always has to be a first time.
Well, yeah. the last I can remember,
Tyson was. I mean,
the Hell
was
in a Cell wrinkle was what made it for me, because I was already on the fence with this as a main event altogether. But now it's overkill putting a special guest.
I mean, if the one that pops in my head is Shawn Michaels was the special guest referee when Bret Hart took on the Undertaker.
That was the only good one.
And he spat in his face
and he smashed the chair.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what Shawn Michaels does for this match. In the back of your head, you're wondering, okay, he's in it now. He's best friends with Triple H, but does he necessarily want to see Triple H end the streak, because he didn't do it himself?
Is Shawn Michaels getting his own entrance with theme at WrestleMania so he can do the thing? The referee shirt again.
I think he'll play a bigger. I think he'll play a bigger part than we're giving him credit for. Personally,
I have to agree with you, because you got to remember something too. Shawn Michaels. How many years does Shawn Michaels go through? You screwed Brett. You screwed Brett. You really think it's going to bother him with a couple of more you screwed Triple H, you screwed Triple H? It's not going to bother him. He's retired, though, too.
I'm not saying that he's not going to play a big role in this. I'm just saying it's unnecessary. I think it's a good enough match. It's already got the streak. It's got the two guys who've been in more Hell in a Cell matches than anybody else. It's got enough. To add another gimmick in there is overkill. That's my point.
But I think it's an interesting twist, though, because you're throwing a guy in there that actually, you know, had a chance to end the streak a couple of years ago. He's intertwined with all this because he's Triple H's best friend. He fought The Undertaker. I just like the extra twist.
I think Boss Man should come back from wherever.
No, here's what you need to do, okay? Since Shawn Michaels says that he knows who's going to win, what Shawn needs to do is take an envelope, write down who he says is going to win, tape it all up, and then at the end of the match, if he's wrong, he gets his head shaved, or he finally gets a good haircut.
No, he didn't know. He'd do that anyways. I've been on that for like months
now. I didn't know Bruce the Barber Beefcake was involved in this.
Yeah, we'll go back to WrestleMania 3 and shit, like they shaved Adrian Adonis' head. But, yeah, who knows? If he does that, he's got to do the Johnny Carson with the turban Karnak.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm okay with the Shawn Michaels involvement. I like the wrinkle and sort of the unknown if he's going to, you know, be impartial or whatnot, but I'm just really excited for this match just because for the first time in a long time, like I said, you sort of are questioning if The Undertaker is going to continue his streak.
All right, let's talk about the main event now. I mean, if we're talking about, you know, The Undertaker Triple H match and CM Punk Jericho really, you know, moving along now. Rock and Cena, I mean,
unbelievable.
The promos that they've been doing the last 3 weeks, and I know I talked to Jeff about this. I mean, there's reports out there that there's actually legit heat between these guys. They're under, you know, they're working under, you know, business circumstances. They understand, but they might actually be upset with each other.
Sorry, which guys?
Rock and Cena.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for joining us,
Dave. Who's this guy?
So Rock and Cena.
He was getting leaked emails.
I threw that in purposely. I could have waited, but I threw it in purposely.
My question to you guys is, I mean, I think we all expected this to be, you know, a pretty good feud with these two guys, but, I mean, it's getting serious now, and I'm actually really excited for this match. I was excited for CM Punk Jericho, and I was excited for Triple H and Undertaker. Now, I really honestly do think that this is perfect, the main event for WrestleMania 28.
Well, you know what? Let's face it. These guys are both professionals, but they're professional egos at the same time. So whether we already know who's going to win or lose or whatever else, the bottom line is that they want to go out on top. Do I think there's some heat? I really think there is some heat starting to go on here. Because let's face it, if you've got this going on and on and on, somebody's going to say something that's going to rub you the wrong way. We already know what we've seen, what happened with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. It was real heat between those two. And there have been other wrestlers in the past where they've been in, you know, feuds that ended up being real heat. Do I think it's happening here? I think there's some legit stuff going on here. And who knows? We may actually see some of it in the ring.
Jeff.
I disagree. I don't think there is. I think it's just, you know, people in WWE, you know, whispering to the internet writers and saying, oh, yeah, there's heat. Sure, let's build it up even more. The difference between The Rock and Cena and Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart was that Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart were sticking around. They both wanted to be the number one guy in the company. They wanted to be the number one heel at the time, both of them. The Rock knows coming into this match, he's not sticking around full time. He knows coming in, he's losing to John Cena because John Cena's sticking around. Absolutely, there's probably a little bit of tension when, you know, one guy one-ups the other one because they want to be the best. But I honestly don't think The Rock, they know their roles going into this match. Whereas, you know, Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart were like, well, you know, if he wins, then I'm, you know, lower down on the card. And if I win, I'm elevated and stuff like that. It's not the case in this situation. So I honestly don't think, I'm sure there's a little bit of tension because they both want to one-up the other one. But I would imagine, to me, there can't be legit heat because they know John Cena's going over on The Rock and he's passing the torch.
I'm looking forward to seeing The Rock wrestle. I'm not looking forward to this match in general as a match. I think John Cena is... I think a lot of people are going to be expecting John Cena to get a similar handover of respect similar to when The Rock fought Hogan, and I just do not see it happening. The Rock accomplished a lot more in the time when he was in the WWE than Cena has, and Cena still has that stigma that he cannot wrestle. And I think a lot of people will agree with that.
I think one of the things I'm enjoying right now, though, I mean, leading up to this, you know, the last couple of weeks, it was always Rock squashing John Cena. And I love what John Cena is doing right now. He's sort of just, you know, just joking around and not really taking The Rock seriously. And it's actually making him seem like a pretty interesting character and actually making him a player in this match, finally.
And have you noticed, though, even though this happened in Boston, did you notice a little bit how the crowd started swaying back over to Cena and not over to The Rock? Everybody has to remember, yeah, Rock has that shtick, but there's always that certain time, and it's happened to him a couple of times, where people are tired of hearing it, and that's when it comes up with the Rocky sucks, Rocky sucks. It's starting to feel like it's slowly starting to come back in there. Yeah, Rock is going to have his fans. It's Miami. It's his home. But at the same time, though, it's starting to be like, oh, geez, we've been hearing this, you know, again, over and over again. And because Cena, and I'm going to give Cena credit, very clever in how
yes.
he's fighting back verbally, I think some people are starting to lean over. Now, I'll tell you straight off the bat, when this whole thing started, I was more on The Rock. Now, I'm leaning over more to Cena.
Jeff, do we need to see physical confrontation between these guys leading into WrestleMania?
No, absolutely not. Keep the banter going and let them finally go at it, you know, touch gloves, so to speak, at WrestleMania. Now, the thing like Rudy alluded to where they were, you know, the fans were sort of getting on The Rock's case a little bit, I think the WWE probably saw that and they said to him, you know what, we got to cut it out on this promo. He came out and cut an intense promo on Cena this past Monday on Raw. I thought it was fantastic. He got right in his face and was saying, you know, you make your jokes or whatever, I'm not scared of you, you know, all this stuff. There was the one where they started chanting Tooth Fairy where you could tell that The Rock was really trying not to laugh, but yeah. I thought that The Rock really pulled off a really intense promo, which is what this program really needed, because John Cena, you know, he was joking, but he was always intense with what he was saying and trying to one-up The Rock, and The Rock was always joking, oh, hashtag this, trending worldwide, making jokes about what John Cena was wearing and changing his camel clothes. This week he came out intense, like a wrestling promo should be. That's what fired me up. That's what really got me into this match.
The one thing that separates WrestleMania over any other crowd is it's more hardcore fans attend that one event than anything else. So I think you're going to see a lot more fans on The Rock than they are on Cena than ever. It's going to be more one-dimensional than I think a lot of people expected. It's not going to be like when Hogan took on Rock and was clearly favored, even though they were saying it was half and half, and it was clearly favored towards Hogan. Yeah, it was favored towards Hogan because the wrestling hardcore fans were happy to see Hogan back. The same thing is going to happen with The Rock, but unless Cena has the match of his life and earns his respect based on his wrestling skills in the match, I do not see him getting that kind of respect and momentum back in his way. I just don't see it.
I guess
it happened in Rocky IV when Rocky got the Russian home crowd on his side, but it's not going to happen at this event.
And you know, let's talk about something, you know, relating to John Cena. I was reading an interview with Edge. They were just talking with him about John Cena, and Edge kind of made the point that, you know, back in the 80s, you had Hulk Hogan. He was the ultimate good guy, and people really soaked it up. Wrestling times have changed now, and people can't stand John Cena because he's too good. And Undertaker. Hulk Hogan would probably be getting the same treatment nowadays if he was wrestling in this era. I mean, there just has to always be an ultimate good guy. And unfortunately for John Cena, whether you look at it that way or not, I mean, he is the guy. He is the ultimate good guy, and he's forced to be in that role.
No, I agree with you. I mean, look, Ricky Steamboat was a good guy throughout his whole career. It worked for him because that's just the way he is. John Cena was at one point a bad guy. He's now the ultimate good guy. Sure, you know, we remember this whole thing that he was supposed to, you know, become angry and vicious and all this. And let's face it, it's not really working for him that way. Leave him as the ultimate good guy. But the thing is, though, it's the intensity. And just what you said earlier, I agree with you, too. You know, he's got to show his wrestling skills in there if he even hopes to make any attempt to get the real hardcore fans. They're going to boo him. They're going to chant at him. Fruity Pebbles the whole bit. But a real, true wrestling fan will appreciate whatever a wrestler does if he does something that is just absolutely spectacular and something that you just would not expect.
Is anybody here expecting John Cena to lose this match? Is everybody sort of
in agreement that he's
going to win this
one?
No,
The Rock's going to lose this match, but I don't see... In fact, I can actually see this, and everyone's going to disagree with me, I'm sure, but I actually see this is going to be the beginning of a heel turn for Cena. I think if the crowd really does boo me, gets no respect, then I think the slide starts to happen.
Anything can happen.
And the frustration
Anything can
builds.
Happen. I'm going to argue about
well,
that.
Well, and I was reading up, The Rock apparently is supposed to have a big role in SummerSlam coming up. So apparently he is coming back for another pay-per-view. So who knows what could happen. I mean, there is that wrinkle in it that they're trying to get him back for SummerSlam. So perhaps Cena picks up the win and The Rock comes back for SummerSlam for his revenge. But I just really don't see it happening. And you know what? A heel turn might make sense for John Cena because there's so many, you know, undercard mid-level guys that could be elevated to that top babyface.
Well, we'll see if our predictions change as we move closer to WrestleMania 28. I should say at the time that we're recording this podcast, the WWE is in town. They were wrestling at the Ricoh Coliseum. And before this podcast, Rudy Blair got a chance to speak with one of the rising stars in the WWE, and that was Dolph Ziggler. Let's hear Rudy's conversation with the one and only Dolph Ziggler.
Dolph, great talking to you, my friend. And I got to say, congratulations on the success with the WWE. I mean, how does it feel knowing that you're almost like in the prime of your career
in the biggest wrestling organization in the world, and as we speak, leading up to, you know, the biggest pay-per-view, WrestleMania.
Yeah, it's going to be the biggest WrestleMania of all time, which is really big compared to our normal pay-per-views, which are big and really fun for all of us. So I feel like I'm in the peak of my career mentally and physically, so I'm looking forward to stealing the show one way or another, whatever I do there.
I got to tell you something, my friend. I want to talk a little bit about your career and growing up in this business, but I remember the first time I saw you, I was like, okay, who is this guy? I hated the name Dolph Ziggler. I was like, is he some porn star or whatever? And as I watched you wrestle, the thing that hit me was you reminded me of a Ric Flair and a Tully Blanchard rolled into one. Because with the charisma and the attitude, but the wrestling, I mean, it's a great package you have here, my friend. It's you're one of those guys, whether it had been in this era or back in the day, I think you would have been a champion either way, my friend.
I was a big fan of, obviously, the Horsemen and Ric Flair and things like that. I kind of based my whole career on being a leader and being someone out there who could kind of be a general in the ring and be awesome at every different aspect, whether it's talking, whether it's being an athlete, whether it's wrestling holds, whether it's anything, showboating, anything. I wanted to have like kind of a renaissance man of wrestling, and Blanchard and Flair, those are two guys that's pretty cool to be mentioned in the same sentence as those guys, and I look forward to being the best ever one day.
Well, you started that off early, my friend, because looking back at your career when you started wrestling, amateur wrestling, you did something a lot of people can't do, man. You broke some records, my friend.
Yeah, I started wrestling when I was 5 years old after I saw my first ever live event for WWE, and I got really excited. I asked my dad to sign me up for wrestling, and I did, and I've been wrestling all the way through, basically through high school and college. And I knew in college, not being a giant guy, being 6 feet tall, you know, I go, if I can break some records here and get noticed, it'll get me a possibility one day to get a tryout with the WWE. So I won the all-time winningest wrestler at Kent State history, and I moved on and trying to get a tryout with the WWE, and that helped me get my foot in the door.
I want people to understand, though, when you're talking about being an amateur to turn into the pro, that middle ground is not easy. No money, no food, traveling. I mean, talk a little bit about that, because there are people that, you know, they watch you, they see the success, they see the fame, but they don't realize what is in between all that.
Yeah, and even on a side note, like half of my family always thought I just worked Monday nights anyway. So I was like, no, we work like 6 days a week. And it's a very taxing schedule, and it's very – just being in the developmental territory, it's you have a chance, you have a shot that one day to be on the roster. There's no guarantees. There's no anything. There's no plan down the road for retirement. There's no anything. You're kind of on your own, you know, to work hard as you can and hope you get lucky. And I was lucky enough to be – called up to the roster on a couple different occasions, and coming into my own right now, and letting people know that we're out there several hundred days a year, a couple hundred days a year, just letting people know like we're doing an appearance, we're doing its charity work, and we have our schedules Friday through Sunday. We have shows, and then we do with our live events, then we do our TVs and pay-per-views, and it's like we're constantly on the go trying to expand globally like we are company-wise.
But a lot of people don't even realize that when, you know, one of the big stints that you did with the WWE, you weren't a single guy. You were with a bunch of guys.
Yeah, I was in a group of five guys. We were called the Spirit Squad, and we were male cheerleaders. And still makes you laugh. I'm glad to hear.
That's the way you said it. Yeah. Male cheerleaders, yeah.
It wasn't the optimal goal that I had in my mind when I was training three times a day, trying to see, you know, okay, am I going to be the next Kurt Angle, Stone Cold? It was a great learning experience. It's a great way to get our foot in the door on the main roster, a bunch of young guys trying to get noticed. And we had, for a year, full 12 months, we had fun. We were in the ring with legends on a nightly basis. And most importantly, we had two or three months live events, TVs, pay-per-views. We were in there with Shawn Michaels, Triple H, and even Ric Flair. And that was a dream come true for me. Those guys are the best at what they do. And just to be in there and just feeling it out and seeing how the crowd responds to them and seeing what they do in certain situations was one of the coolest things I've ever done.
One of the coolest things that I love about you when I watch you wrestle is when you are in the ring, I mean, man, you're almost a bit like a Shawn Michaels, because when Shawn gets hit or something, I mean, he's like over the top road. I mean, he's on the ground. He's everything else. You've got this way, man. When you get hit, your body contorts in such a way. I'm just like, is he really knocked out or whatever? I mean, that's not an easy thing to do, man.
I study my craft, and I want to be great at all aspects of it, and I've really concentrated on not just having moves, but when they're done to you, kind of stealing the show in every aspect. And when it's things like that and we're out there to entertain, I want to do the best, and I want people to remember what happened to me or what happened to the match I was in. So that's me doing my best part to have a great opponent, have them look great, and have a great match.
But here's the thing, though. You just seem to always be on that cusp of winning that world title. I mean, you had it at one point. What is going on exactly with that? Because it's almost a give that at some point in time you will have it, whether it be the WWE title or the world title. What's going on with that right now?
Well, right now I'm not in the mix. I was a couple of weeks ago, and I'm getting to a point in my career where I think I'm ready to go. I'm ready to main event full time. I'm ready to be a leader. I'm ready to have this company on my back and take it to the promised land. And one of these days, timing-wise, it's going to work out where the ball is presented. I'm going to snatch it and run with it. And I've always been on the cusp for the last couple months, even last year at the Royal Rumble. And it's like, it's just so close that I can almost taste it, and then it's kind of not there anymore. So it just, it makes me want to do better, want to be better. It makes me hungrier for when I do get it, that I've earned every single step of the way on my own. I did this.
Well, here's the thing, because I want to be devil's advocate. You've got Vicky Guerrero. Do you really think you need Vicky Guerrero? Because I'll tell you personally, I don't think you do. And what you said about being a leader, I think you're ready to be running some kind of organization right now, my friend.
I honestly love having her in my corner. I love the reaction she gets when she comes out. I love the experience and years she's had in this business and around this business. She's great at what she does. And sometimes on the right special night, you can't hear a word anyone's saying because she's out there. So I think we make a great team. One day down the line, maybe we won't be a team, but right now, the position I'm in, I love having her in my back pocket.
What would you say so far has been your favorite match?
Me and Edge, Royal Rumble last year, was maybe 25, 28 minutes or something, and we beat the hell out of each other, and it was kind of special to me because he had been kind of a mentor to me backstage. We had traveled a couple months into that, us going against each other for about a year off and on. We rode together, and I got to learn from some experiences from him and everything. So it was special being out there, special having a great match, and have it be a world championship match at the Royal Rumble. And it was technically I won, which I don't really count that. Technically in the books, that counts that I was world champion, but I'm looking forward to being a world heavyweight champion for a long time down the line, having a legitimate run.
And, you know, cross fingers that will happen at a WrestleMania. Growing up, what was your favorite WrestleMania moment watching the spectacular event?
Wow, there's WrestleMania, there's a bunch that I've seen, but I used to watch some old tapes with Mike Mondo, who was on the Spirit Squad with me. We shared an apartment in FCW for about 8 months or something, and we would watch wrestling tapes. And Hulk Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior was something really fun. It was special back then. And if
I was there.
Were you really?
I was there, because it was here in Toronto.
Wow, that's pretty awesome, because seeing it then, it was a different time for sports entertainment, and you watch it back. If you watch it back closely, you're going to lose some of the magic. So you watch it as a fan, and we would have a blast watching that match back every couple weeks or something, just enjoying just the buzz that was around it. Not so much the technical moves or anything like that, but just it was so special to like watch it as a fan that you still get the shivers down your back, you know, as it comes to a close. So
with WrestleMania coming up, we haven't really heard anything yet for you on what you're exactly going to do. Do we know anything yet?
I do not. One way or another, I think I'm looking forward to being on that card one way or another. I know people are coming to see Triple H versus Undertaker with Shawn. They're coming to see Cena and The Rock. We're going to have all these eyes on us, and I'm going to find a way one way or another, whether it be 30 seconds, 30 minutes, whether it be a run-in, something. I will make my presence felt, and I will try and steal the show out from underneath everybody else.
As we speak, you'll be probably stealing the show tonight, man, because we got wrestling here in Toronto.
Yes, of course. Anytime I get a chance for a WWE championship match or a big match, I go out there. I'm going to try and steal the show anyway, but I'm trying to steal the show and become champion. So maybe if I win tonight, I can make that a triple threat with CM Punk and Chris Jericho and myself at WrestleMania. So let them know that don't worry. If Punk loses tonight, I'll let him be in the match with me at WrestleMania.
Any chance, I know, because it seems like these days a lot of wrestlers take that jump to different things. could we see you on the big screen? Does the WWE have any ideas of maybe DVD for you or anything like that?
I like to entertain, and I practice all facets of entertainment, whether it's comedy or acting or anything like that. So I'm always ready to go for whatever they need or whatever we can do to help promote WWE. Right now, I am focused on being the best sports entertainer in the world right now, and I'm coming into my own. So at some point down the line, absolutely, I'm sure we'll see something on the big screen, something along the lines that's getting other eyes who wouldn't normally watch WWE. They go, hey, we like that guy in this movie. Let's check out Monday Night Raw and see what he's doing there. So it would be purely to cross-promote what I love to do, sports entertainment.
Fantastic. As we wrap this up, I don't even know I need to ask this, but I'll ask it anyways. Twitter, where do we follow you?
At Heel Ziggler, and just went over 250,000 followers, which is crazy because most people don't understand half the things I say because a little too smart for some people. But if you like to be entertained, which I like to entertain, follow me on Twitter.
I gotta ask you one really last question. How much of the Dolph Ziggler in the ring is the person that I have sitting here with me? How close are they really?
Ridiculously close. For a while, about a year ago, Dolph Ziggler was me turned down a notch. And so now I'm kind of coming into where I'm kind of evening out the switch, rated how I am in my normal life. I love entertaining and showing off in my normal life and in the ring. So one and the same, the more natural I am out there, the more real that you're going to see me.
Fantastic. My friend, thank you so much for this.
Thank you.
That was Rudy Blair's conversation with WWE superstar Dolph Ziggler.
Rudy, did at any point, even off the mic, did you ask him about his theme song? Or
no, nothing like that.
Because everything, this is one of my pet peeves about showing the world, and everything has to be about the world with every wrestler. So I want to know exactly what he was planning on showing.
Look, you heard me talk about the fact that, yeah, you know, his name is like a porn star, so close enough to the theme, I guess. I don't know, man. So.
All right, let's move on to the random wrestling question.
You really didn't want to go into that porn
of the week. No, I don't know.
Sometimes, completely ignored it.
Sometimes, I guess Val Venus, maybe that's the name you could throw there.
Hello, Zellers.
Sometimes we just talk about things and I just don't know how to segue out of them. All right, our random wrestling question of the week is worst title changes ever. And this is obviously spurred on by Santino Marella. Some people have had issue with that if you've been listening to this podcast so far. Let's start with Jeff Roman. What is your worst title change ever?
Oh, gosh. The obvious one is the David Arquette WCW heavyweight title run. Like, that is just, like, first of all, I don't even know where to start with this. You don't put the title on an actor, somebody that's not sticking around. Second of all, if you're going to the off chance, why are you putting it on like a D-level celebrity? I get he made a wrestling movie. Whoop-dee-doo. Like, what are you thinking? And then he heel turned and joined like DDP or Jeff Jarrett or whoever it was at the time. It was just absolutely ridiculous. There's so many that come to mind. I mean, putting the Intercontinental belt on the Honky Tonk Man after that huge buildup between Ricky Steamboat and Randy Savage way back in 1987. Like, I don't know what they were thinking with that. I mean, just those are the two that come off the top of my head, but if you give me 5 minutes, I'll come up with about 20 more.
I have one, and I don't remember exactly who he beat, but Vince McMahon as the ECW champion has to be there. As the ECW champion, the guy who's probably the furthest thing from extreme. Now, Shane McMahon winning ECW champion actually would have been okay with, because he had some pretty extreme matches in his time, particularly with Kurt Angle and Test as well. His brother-in-law, or he's supposed to be, but whatever, that whole angle. But yeah, Vince McMahon, the one time when he came back, when he wasn't even reinstated, was I think it was the second ever SmackDown, and Austin helped him beat Triple H for the WWE or WWF championship back then.
Made himself the champion of his own organization.
But then when he was ECW champion, that was just a screw you to the entire culture of extreme wrestling.
I don't know if I can beat any of this stuff, man. I mean, that's some bad stuff. But the one we were talking about beforehand has to be former writer Vince Russo winning the WCW title. Now, if you remember this, he was wrestling against Booker T in a steel cage, and he had all this football
gear
and stuff. And, you know, there was never really a pinfall. And he decided to announce the next week that he was going to be the WCW champion. Now, as people knew back then, that Vince Russo really started to lose track in what wrestling,
what his position was in wrestling. I mean, he thought he was a wrestler. He was running around doing the crotch chop. And, you know, it was just like, guy, take a step back. You are not a wrestler. You are a writer. And the fact the stuff you're writing right now is really crap. So the fact that you announced that you're going to be the world champion, man, that was just embarrassing.
My memory eludes me, but this one has to be mentioned. I don't remember. You guys will remember who he fought. It was the Jarrett Hogan where he just laid down the middle of the ring.
Oh, yeah.
And there was some real tension behind the scenes there that led to that, but that's also one of the worst titles.
Well, I guess the one,
ever.
Yeah, I mean, the finger poke of doom, that's the one that stands out the most, and a lot of people point to that as the beginning of the end of WCW. Of course, it was Hollywood Hogan running NWO Hollywood against Kevin Nash, who was running the Wolfpack at the time, and then Hogan just pokes him and pins him, but the part that people forget about that one is because I guess WCW was, you know, giving away the results of Monday Night Raw at the time, and Tony Schiavone mentioned, you know, Mick Foley, you know, won the title on Raw because it was taped Raw, and then people ended up changing over to Raw to witness Mick Foley winning the World Heavyweight Championship, beating The Rock for his first title, and I think like 600,000 people or some crazy number turned over to Raw, so a lot of people actually didn't get to see the finger poke of doom.
Yeah, see, I told you, give me 5 minutes, I got some more. China is Intercontinental Champion.
Oh, yeah.
Brutal. Harvey Whippleman as Women's Champion.
Wasn't that a kitchen match?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Harvey Whippleman as Women's Champion. I don't know like what happened there. Marty Jannetty and the 1-2-3 Kid upsetting the Quebecers as tag team champions. And you can run off the tag team list, you know, for days. The Godwins, the Body Donnas, some of the worst. But
Maven as hardcore champion.
Maven as hardcore champion.
The one who was 24-7 on the hardcore
champion. The Cat is hardcore champion. Wrestlers.
Now, you know, for me, though, growing up, I still remember the Mid-Atlantic Wrestling when Roddy Piper defeated Ric Flair for the U.S. title. Now, people thinking about it now, they're just like, you know, well, why would that be anything big? You got to remember something. Roddy Piper was wrestling in some really small organizations when they brought him up. He was wrestling in L.A., he was wrestling in Portland, he was wrestling in Vancouver, and he wasn't a big wrestler. In fact, he wasn't really much of a wrestler, period. He was just a good talker. So the fact that they were going to give him the U.S. title, beating Ric Flair, who was, you know, just on the prone of winning the world championship. I remember all my friends coming back to school the next day, you know, or I should say on the Monday, going, Roddy, who beat Flair? Are you kidding me? But then again, what ended up happening was it was really the beginning of a legendary career.
Yeah, Virgil is $1 million champion.
That's fine. You know, the belt was ridiculous to begin
Virgil
with.
Virgil as champion is never fine.
Yeah. No, that was fine because it wasn't a legitimate belt to begin with. Okay, if it was any other belt, fine. The belt itself was cool. I think everyone wanted that belt when it happened. I love that belt. That belt is one of the most glorious looking, extravagant belts of all time.
Okay, so you're trying to tell me that if you had a choice of belts, that would be the belt that you would want is the million of...
I actually want that belt.
Can you phone in next week, man?
I want that
belt. Here comes a long anticipated.
I guarantee you I am not alone in this, that if you actually had to have a replica belt for yourself, the most badass belt or the most regal, coolest looking belt ever was $1 million. All diamonds and gold. It was incredible.
I'll throw a couple more out there.
It wasn't really diamond, okay? It
was whatever.
And only because I saw it on the DVD, and I totally forgot. When The Rock and The Undertaker beat Edge and Christian for the tag team titles.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
And Shawn Michaels is the European champion,
which
was a waste of time.
Yeah.
That's the one of the worst belts in history wrestling.
The European belt was a waste of time.
That's what I just said. Yeah.
The whole belt was a waste of time.
Okay, wait a minute. Yeah. So you would still rather have that $1 million belt over the European belt, a legit championship?
Okay, really?
Yes, really.
Calling the European title a legit title is...
Hey, Steven Regal did some good things with that thing, man.
Okay. D'Lo Brown.
And the $1 million man didn't do some good things with that title?
Don't get me started. I interviewed him once, and
Okay, if you have a personal beef with him, that has nothing to do with anything.
Look,
that's your beef with
him. We were on a certain talk show, and I won't mention the name of the talk show, and he kind of ripped me the wrong way. I even looked at him and said, man, I buy your action doll. All he did was look at me and say, well, thank you.
Wow.
And just went on.
You know what? Okay, you have a personal score to settle with him. I understand that you can get jaded over things like that. I still think... Personal differences aside, the $1 million belt.
I'm jaded that you're still here. Yeah. That's what
you
I'm
should
jaded
have put him
about.
In a $1 million dream and then put a Benjamin in his mouth to end the show. Jeff.
No, there's. Just, I mean, we can go on for days about bad title reigns, but yeah, there's just so many. I think for me, Harvey Whippleman as women's champion, Hervina, I think his name was, where he came out and drank, might be the worst
Gilbert
ever.
Gilbert is hardcore champion.
Yeah, lightweight champion.
We really could go on for days.
Gilbert.
You know, I just want to say this. I think this has been the best top turnbuckle
yet. We've been heated up. We need to do this more often when we're all tired.
Yeah, no. A lot of great discussion on this edition. Thanks for doing this again, guys. We'll leave you with Mark Hominick, one of the best in the UFC. We'll leave you with his WrestleMania moment. Like I said, we'll continue to do these as we get closer to WrestleMania 28, but we will leave you with Mark Hominick's favorite WrestleMania moment.
Hey, this is Martin Machine Hominick. My favorite WrestleMania moment was WrestleMania 6 when the Ultimate Warrior took on Hogan and beat him at the Sky Dome. You know, my buddies and I, we'd always get together for the pay-per-views and, you know, watch the Royal Rumble leading up to the WrestleMania, which always turned into a Royal Rumble of our own, you know, for a few broken lamps and whatnot every time. So we always had to change the house of the party for the parents' sake. But yeah, WrestleMania 6 is probably the biggest, you know, memory I have when the Ultimate Warrior beat Hogan, I believe. He was, you know, the big underdog and when he beat Hogan in Toronto. So that was definitely a big memory for me.